Welcome to Fast Cars, Fast Girls with Abby and Molly.
Hey everyone, it's Molly. We have an interview for you from just before Christmas. We sat down with Mike Hull at Chip Ganassi Racing and talked to him about the Rolex 24 Hours. Now, I will tell you that somehow technology went against us, so we've lost some of the interview, but there is some discussion on the 24, and he does a very good compare and contrast to the IndyCar race itself. So we hope you enjoy this interview, and we will see you next week.
Yeah, no, if you're reaching out with you, I'm kind of talking about the 24, because...
Okay, yeah, good.
Yeah. Because number one, I say you actually live... eat, sleep, dream about racing all the time, and we're coming up to the 24. So, yeah. And like you said, there are a lot of drivers so that aren't normally in, that aren't in the rest of the season that come to that. So,
and we're getting excited for it too.
We are.
Yeah, we enjoy doing the 24 hours of Daytona. I don't know that we ever really thought we were going to get to do it, honestly. When we started here at Chip Ganassi Racing, when Chip Ganassi Racing started, as well as all of us that participated here with Chip for a long time, you know, our roots are in open wheel racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when the opportunity came along in 2004 to start sports car racing, it was a great opportunity for us. We didn't know anything about sports car racing really, like, you know, we were fans.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right? We were fans of sports car racing, fans of the drivers, the teams, and so on. And the series was filled with some terrific drivers and teams, and we were fish out of water there at the beginning. But we got going, and honestly, it took us... we won the 24 Hours of Daytona the first time in 2006. So 2 full years of racing before we were in a position to win the race the way that you needed to win it, which not fall into it to actually win the race.
Yeah.
I guess the rest is history there. We've won that race... Kelby were here 7 or 8 times, I think 8 times now. It's when you race that race, it's before everybody else's season begins. There are drivers who have always wanted to participate in that particular race, and they try to find a way to be able to do that, a way in. There are 3 categories that race in the race: prototype cars, GTLM cars, which are manufacturer-supported GT cars, so they're fully manufactured entries, and then there's GTD, which is, most of them are manufactured entries, but they have an amateur and a professional driver in them. And then at Daytona, you have 3 or 4 drivers in each car. Mm-hmm. So you invite some of the most globally recognized drivers in the world to come and participate with you there. It's a fantastic race in terms of that. It's funny, like Friday, there is an amazing day. It's a practice day. You've already had a full practice day and into the evening Thursday night. That's a long practice day. But Friday is just a practice day. And it's like the people that turn up there on Friday, it's like a who's who in the paddock there. It's amazing. And they might vanish and never come back. They might only come for Friday, but it's people you haven't seen for a long time or you've always wanted to meet, one or the other. And it's a lot of fun to do the race. And with the direction now that IMSA has, the support they give the manufacturers, you know, on the grounds there, I think there are 16 manufacturers represented when you think about it like that. So... It's a fantastic place to race, and it's followed in March, almost 60 days later to the date, a little less than that, and, 12 hours of Sebring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this year, Sebring's going to have a WEC race on Friday and an IMSA race on Saturday, so that's going to be a really terrific thing, too. It's fun to race there.
I bet. Yeah, we've not made it to Sebring yet.
You know, it conflicts with St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, it does. Is that a problem? You can't celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Sebring, or they don't do it there? Or?
Well, we've got quite the St. Patrick's Day tradition up here. So next year, it won't be an issue because St. Patrick's Day will be on a weekday. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we can be in Sebring for the race.
We're IndyCar racing in St. Petersburg the weekend before.
Well, we won't be there for that.
And then we kind of journey on over to the middle of nowhere in Sebring. And that's a very historical place anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What it was originally was Hendricks Field, which was an Air Force, Army Air Force base in World War II for B-17 bomber training. After the war was over, some sports car enthusiasts looked at all those concrete runways. They built long runways so guys could practice landing a B-17. So if they missed, they could still have plenty of concrete in front of them to stop the airplane. And you've got north, south, east, west runways there that are equally long, and a huge, huge facility that was decommissioned as a Air Force base. And sports car people decided they could make a racetrack out of it. And so in the 60s, they began racing there, and they've raced there ever since.
That's
awesome.
Really, really cool.
It is really cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to find books to read about this.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So what are some of your favorite parts of the Rolex weekend?
Oh. I don't know if I'm the same, different, or indifferent to the way people look at it. I'm not sure. The way I've always looked at the race itself, number one, to answer the short answer would be the race. To know that you have an opportunity to not only participate but have a team that can win the race is really, really important. I've always looked at the race as 24 1-hour races. Mm-hmm. So you race 24 times, not a 24-hour race. You have to be the best you could be for each of those segments of the race. And if you can do that right and put yourself in a position to be on the lead lap with about 3 or 4 hours to go, then it's go time. And I think everybody looks at it that way, that wants to be in that race. There's two ways to go racing. One is to participate, and one is to be in the race. And we prefer to be in the race.
Sure.
And if we can be, we do whatever it takes to do that. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you win that race, you've won it with the best people in your category of racing being there. Mm-hmm. We applaud those that have beat us there, and I know they applaud us when we've won there. So it's you understand the difficulty of getting it done when you show up there, the people that are rewarded are the people that spend the least amount of time in the pit lane, which means that I'm not talking about pit stops, I'm talking about having to fix your problems. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have to be prepared for that. And our people here practice that. They practice fixing problems efficiently. And we take a lot of pride in that. So that's a lot of fun. You don't want to really exercise that. You'd rather watch them practice that than have them have to do it in the real world. But being fully prepared there is a lot of lines on an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, all of the what ifs, and then the splinters of what ifs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first year we raced there, when we were terrible there, but we came home and we sat around a big table downstairs in one of the conference rooms here. And I think we made an Excel spreadsheet for being ready to go back to race the following year, vocationally around the room. And I think the spreadsheet at the time was over 500 single-spaced items that we needed to improve upon. That's not unlike what we do when we come back for any event.
Yeah.
But that event was like, well, we needed to do this with the driver, we needed to do this with the food, we needed to do this with the car, we needed to do this. We needed a better job of being in the right hotel. It wasn't just things that... It's things that you don't want your people to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just want them to be able to do their job. And when it comes to doing their job, you want them to have full efficiency when they do it. And so it's all those things that make a big difference. And we'll do the same when we come back from the St. Petersburg race mm-hmm. with IndyCar. We'll do exactly the same thing. We do it every year. We just sit down and try to improve ourselves, because if you have things that are solved easily, you have time to solve the hard problems. Mm-hmm. So that's how we've always looked at it.
Makes like a lot of sense.
Wow, 500 single space items.
So I feel like that was us discussing how next season's going to go.
Yep.
So we went to a lot more races this last season, camped a lot of places, and it's like, all right, we figured out a lot of things that don't work. A lot of things that can be better.
Yeah, sure.
So it sounds like you guys start prepping for, like, the next Daytona, like the day you come back home.
We always will, because what we want to do is we want to make sure if there's a project on that we have to work on, mm-hmm. we give ourselves enough time during the year to be ready with that project, and don't just put it on the shelf until October, November, December, thinking that it's just going to find reality in January. Yeah, that's sure. So hard to do because you have so many other projects that have come along.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
So yeah, we just we work really, really hard all year.
Yeah.
To improve ourselves.
Okay. Yeah. Those 500 items gotta get ticked off somehow.
Right. And you asked me a few minutes ago about, I don't know what the question was, but something about what do I like about the races?
Sure.
I think everybody in racing, including the people that work at Chippenassy Racing, enjoy participating in big races.
Mm-hmm.
Races that are considered to have global stature. That this race has that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can achieve something at this race, you're measured against somebody, you're measured against performance from the past. And you're creating a performance denominator for the future that somebody else is going to have to match.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's really neat about doing this race. It's no different than the Indianapolis 500. You know, Roger Penske set a mark there that I think somebody can eventually beat. But they better start now. I think this will be Roger's 50th year. I think it's going to be his 50th year at Indianapolis this year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, he's won 18 or 19 times at Indy out of 50 tries. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. He, in terms of him comparing him to Chip, I mean, he had over a 20-year head start on Chip.
Yeah.
So Chip went ahead and let him have a little bit of liberty there. So I hope in Chip's lifetime he's able to do the same thing that Mr. Penske's done, because sure. I think that's also a big race, and it measures your team.
Mm-hmm.
And it sets your team apart. And while you're part of it, you don't think too much about it, but you look back on it. Somebody will look back on it and say, man, that was really terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Because when you're in the middle of it, you don't think about it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right with the comparison between the two, and especially when you look at, you know, when you win, you look back at former winners and think, I'm on this level with these people.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
You know, it really hits home when you go to they have a couple of dinners there, and I usually go to those dinners. I get invited to go to those dinners these days. And you see the people there that have done something significant at Daytona.
Mm-hmm.
Or here in India, you see somebody at one of those dinners that's done something that is considered to be significant for Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if you can be alive when your lineage is created, that's rare.
Yeah.
I think it's great in motor racing that you get to see some of those people who are long since stopped racing themselves but are still have an enormous passion for racing. Mm-hmm. And you can see, when you see them interact, why they achieved what they achieved.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Hmm.
What are some... Because most of our listeners are IndyCar fans, so what are some of the similarities between IndyCar and the Daytona as far as prep stuff, race stuff?
Well, the common denominator is the car and the driver, or in this case, the drivers. And I think you have to have world-class drivers driving your car if you want to have world-class result.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, every once in a while, you can luck into something. But the reality is, the harder you work with quality people, the better your opportunity is.
Sure.
So to compare the two, I think it's that simple. You look at the race itself, you look at the race distance, you look at the strategy to be in the race, the strategy that you would employ throughout the entire race in order to put yourself on the lead lap at the end, which is very similar to IndyCar racing. In this case, you have multiple drivers, so you oftentimes look at the matchup that you have. You may have a driver rotation that you think is, that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you got your three or four drivers, depending on what you're doing, and you say, okay, this driver's going to start, this driver, and then we're just going to keep rotating. And then you also have the opportunity to leave your driver in for more than one stint. But then you might get to 10 o'clock at night, and you're trying to achieve something at that point in time in terms of keeping yourself on the lead lap or lapping cars or doing things like that. You might roll that driver rotation based on who you might be racing against at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't depend on the driver that's in the car, but it just might be that matchup. It's really, really important for you. So that's probably one of the biggest differences between a single driver and multiple drivers.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a driver that got food poisoning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, or their back's hurting them all of a sudden because they've been in the car too long, or there's all kinds of things, and we've experienced all those.
Okay.
1 year we had one driver that had food poisoning. We didn't see him. He did his first stint. We didn't see him for 12 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And in the middle of all that, the next driver can remain nameless. He's won the Indy 500 for us a couple of times. All of a sudden, his back really started bothering him. So we had one driver left.
Oh no.
Which was Scott Dixon, and he drove like half the race. which was not in the plan. So that it just kind of, those things roll, you know, that way. You never quite know what's going to happen in a long distance race, and so you have to really be able to, on the fly, make decisions that are positive for the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Be able to adapt. And
yeah. You know, you race at St. Petersburg, it's a 2-hour sprint race by comparison.
Yeah.
and it seems probably long, you know, you're going to stop three times in the pits.
Thanks again for listening, guys. Sorry that part of that cut out, but sometimes technology is not our friend at all. If you haven't yet, you should start following us on social media as the race season is quickly approaching. Our Twitter is FastCarsIN317, so FastCars in 317. Our Instagram is FastCarsFastGirls, and our Facebook is facebook.com/FastCarsFastGirls. All of this also is on our website, which is www.fastcarsfastgirls.com. You can subscribe from our website. You can contact us via our website. You can find our social media there. Pictures are there and blogs are there. We would love it if you'd give us a follow or a subscribe and share us with your friends and family. Thanks, everyone.